Whistleblower Report, exposing lies, deceptions, and all that has assaulted our way of life. We must take back our freedom and live as God designed in a free America that honors our Constitution and our Creator. Our experts in medicine, ministry, law, military, environment, and education empower us to grow together as a nation. For such a time as this, the Whistleblower Report offers truth and solutions. Welcome to the Whistleblower Report. This is Dr. Lee for America with the medical report today. And we're going to be talking about the FDA's stipulation of settlement with the courageous doctors who filed suit against the FDA for their war on ivermectin and their lies to the public. And all of the outrageous social media posts mocking people who wanted to use ivermectin for the treatment of COVID-19. And with me is my guest, Dr. Paul Marek, one of the world's leading pulmonary and critical care medical specialists, and with his colleague, Dr. Pierre Corey, the founder of FLCCC, the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance, that was the first in the country to pioneer integrative, innovative treatments for COVID-19 illness, particularly focused on the critical care setting. He was an inspiration to me at the beginning of the COVID pandemic when I was looking to reliable resources and experts I could trust to guide me as an outpatient physician in approaches to consider. And I first came across the FLCCC COVID treatment protocol for inpatient critical care patients in, I think it was March 2020, and began using some of those principles for my outpatient treatment of COVID patients. And Dr. Marek, interestingly enough, was at the time in charge of pulmonary medicine for Sentara Hospitals in Norfolk, Virginia, and on the faculty as chief of pulmonary medicine at Eastern Virginia Medical School, which was my medical school and the hospital where I did my own internal medicine training. So it was really inspiring to see the leadership that Dr. Marek gave the country and the world at that time. Tragically, the outcome for him professionally, as happened to many of us trying to go against the government narrative, was that my medical school, in a betrayal of the oath that I took as a physician graduating from Eastern Virginia Medical School, actually fired him for being successful at saving lives and treating patients with the ivermectin and integrative protocol. So did Sentara Hospital. I am appalled at what took place in institutions I previously respected. And I think all of us need to pay attention to the way in which traditional medicine has betrayed the oath to the patients in subservience to the government narrative. But in a victory now in 2024, we have the FDA caving on their war on ivermectin because three courageous doctors, Dr. Paul Marek, Dr. Mary Talley Bowden, and Dr. Robert Apter, sued the FDA. And they have been forced into a settlement that dropped their attacks on ivermectin. So here to tell us about that and the significance of it is Dr. Marek himself. one of the key plaintiffs for this lawsuit. Dr. Merrick, again, I applaud your courage, your tireless dedication to saving lives in the true Hippocratic medical tradition of focus on the patient, using the best of our ability to figure out new problems and use the science responsibly to help the patients. You are an inspiration to all of us. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Dr. Flitt, for having me on, and thank you for those kind words.
Well, tell us about the lawsuit and the settlement so that our listeners can understand, what does it mean when the FDA had to give in and reach this stipulation of settlement?
Yeah, so this is a landmark settlement in terms of the FDA and their outreach. So basically, you know, we sued them because they had exceeded their regulatory authority in what they were permitted to do. You know, as the Fifth Circuit Court judge said, the FDA is not a doctor. They're there to regulate medicine. They're not there to tell physicians how to practice medicine, which is exactly what the FDA did, is that through multiple mechanisms, and most famously their tweet, "You're not a horse, you're not a cow, stop it," they profoundly influenced the narrative. And part of the narrative was that ivermectin was a toxic horse deworming medicine not fit for human use. And they did this specifically because ivermectin was a significant threat to them. So the reality is ivermectin has billions of doses have been given to millions of people in Africa and South America for the treatment of parasitic diseases. It's one of the safest medications known to mankind. It won the Nobel Prize. The Satoshi Omura and Dr. Campbell, who discovered ivermectin, actually were awarded the Nobel Prize in medicine for their discovery. There are very few Nobel Prizes awarded for the discovery of a medication.
For the FDA to say in those ads that it was dangerous for humans and it was a horse dewormer is absolutely preposterous, because the FDA had approved it for human use. The product ivermectin has been on the market as an FDA-approved drug for decades.
Exactly. So they lied. I mean, simply stated, the FDA lied. They went on a misinformation campaign. So it is absurd that we accused of spreading misinformation, where in fact it's the agencies and the government that has been spreading misinformation. And so basically the lawsuit was against the misinformation. You know, there was no punitive or financial damages. It was just a matter of correcting their misinformation and holding the FDA accountable for what they did. And so the bottom line is, and it came through clearly, that the FDA can regulate medicine, but they can't tell doctors how to practice medicine. They're not physicians. But the FDA, together with their accomplices, went out of the way to discredit the use of ivermectin. In particular, they sent a letter to the Federation of State Medical Boards, and the Federation of State Medical Boards basically controls all the medical boards, the state medical boards in this country. They sent the same letter to the Board of Pharmacy, basically discouraging the use of ivermectin. And so ivermectin posed a severe threat to their narrative. And their narrative was to get a jab in every arm. And for the vaccine and these new medications to be used, they needed to get an EUA, an emergency use authorization. And according to the FDA policy, in order for the FDA to issue an EUA, there had to be no alternative effective therapy. And so ivermectin clearly was an alternative effective therapy. So if it was acknowledged that ivermectin was indeed effective for SARS-CoV-2, which it is, it would have nullified the EUA for the vaccines. So there were trillions of dollars at stake. So the FDA and their accomplices did everything they could possibly do to vilify and to promote false information about the use of ivermectin, which is indeed a tragedy because it's highly effective against SARS-CoV-2. And we believe if it had been used early in the pandemic, early treatment, it could have saved millions of lives. And indeed, we know from a number of countries like Uttar Pradesh in India, certain provinces in Mexico, and Brazil, that they were able to control COVID-19 with ivermectin. So this was not by accident. This was a purposefully designed public relations campaign spearheaded by the FDA to vilify ivermectin. And they were really successful because the general public and many doctors today still think that ivermectin is a toxic horse deworming medicine, which, as you said, is absurd because it's been used successfully in millions of patients across the world and is one of the safest medications that we know.
Well, and the FDA had approved it themselves. I mean, it's such a blatant lie, and anyone could look up the fact that it was an approved drug manufactured by Merck and available for human use and for veterinary use. And anyone could look up the fact that it was FDA approved. But I remember that war on both hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. I was writing editorials for AAPS National Release in March, April, May, and June of 2020 about the orchestrated campaign. And I brought out exactly the issue you just said, that this was a suppression of all effective treatments for COVID-19 so that they could justify the EUA to get the COVID shot under EUA, which gave them the ability to inject it in people without adequate clinical trials and without true informed consent. It was absolutely, I mean, I was saying it for a long time. This was a crime against humanity, the suppression of early treatment for COVID, which was easily treatable outpatient, and they made people stay home and get sicker. They told doctors not to treat it outpatient, and then they would come to the critical care admission that you saw, and they'd be critically ill because nobody had been willing to step up and treat them early. It was just unconscionable.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So, apart from ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, there are at least 20 other compounds that have been proven to be very effective for the use in early COVID. Vitamin D is absolutely critical, and there's no question of doubt that everybody should have been treated with vitamin D, particularly people in elder homes who were likely vitamin D deficient. Vitamin D is very important for the immune system and would have, together with ivermectin, significantly reduced the risk of death. But there are many other drugs, such as fluvoxetine, bromhexine. There are many, many other drugs, melatonin, quercetin. So, there's extensive literature on the use of, early treatment for SARS-CoV-2, but they wanted to suppress that data to scare people into believing that the only answer was the vaccine. But we now know the vaccine, or so-called vaccine, does not prevent you getting COVID. It does not prevent you spreading COVID. It does not prevent hospitalization. It does not prevent death. Indeed, we know from the Cleveland Clinic that the more you vaccinated, the greater the risk of COVID. So let me say that again. This is meant to prevent COVID, but the data from the Cleveland Clinic shows that the more you vaccinate, the greater the risk of COVID. So this was complete and utter fraud, and as you said, a crime against humanity. The goal was to vaccinate people with this experimental therapy, for which there was very little long-term studies in favor of known safe, effective therapies. It's a complete outrage.
Well, it absolutely has been. And I see that in my own practice. Now, I'm all ambulatory outpatient medical practice. I stopped doing hospital work when I came to Arizona 30 years ago. But every single one of the patients, and I see patients from across the country, and I always have since I've been out here, because it's really staggering for me to see that of the patients in my practice who got the COVID shots, and particularly those who are still getting boosters, these people are having three, four, five different episodes of COVID. So I'm seeing it in clinical practice that the Cleveland Clinic data is playing out every day that I work with patients in the vaccinated patients, plus the rise in cancers. I saw more breast cancers in patients in November of 2022 than I'd seen in previous 20 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the list of complications related to the vaccines is enormously long. There's no disease that the vaccine can't cause. And obviously, most troubling is the abrupt increase in cancers known as turbo cancers. So we know, I think there's pretty good data now that the use of the vaccine has been associated with a pretty significant increase in the risk of cancers, particularly in young people. And so, recently in the news, we know that the Princess of Wales, Kate Middleton, has been diagnosed with an abdominal cancer. She's a previously healthy 42-year-old woman. We know she was extensively vaccinated. So one has to wonder whether she has a turbo cancer, which would be obviously a complete tragedy. But nobody is talking about it, and I think it's really important that this issue be discussed because these vaccines have to stop. They are toxic, have severe adverse events, and we need to put a complete moratorium on the use of these so-called vaccines.
Well, you're absolutely right. And there are many reputable, trustworthy physicians of courage and integrity around the world who are calling for that complete moratorium. And most of them have been suppressed, persecuted, and demonized. And yet, the data worldwide, and it's coming from actuarial data in the insurance industry, it's coming from death certificate data, it's coming from morticians, it's coming from doctors, it's coming from cancer centers. Everywhere we turn, there is increase in long, slow road to disability and incapacitation with people the more COVID shots they get. And the turbo cancers have skyrocketed. I've never seen over my career, and I've been in medicine 40 years, and I know you have equally been in medicine a long time. And I don't think either one of us have ever seen the skyrocketing, aggressive, late-stage cancers in younger people that we've seen in the last 2 years after the COVID shots were rolled out in 2021 and the cancers started rising in 2022. And back to your point about the Princess of Wales, while neither of us have examined her, neither of us know her medical records, it is rare for a healthy 42-year-old woman to develop a cancer in the situation that she has such good medical monitoring as a member of the royalty in Britain. And the two that are the most common to occur in women in that age group are ovarian cancer and colon cancer. Well, what's interesting to me is that early on, Dr. Mike Yeadon was warning about the fact that the data in the pharmaceutical research from 15 years before the shots rolled out showed that the lipid nanoparticle technology concentrated in the ovaries and testicles and also other endocrine organs. So, of course, this raises the question in my mind, since I've worked in women's health for so long, was this an ovarian cancer triggered by the combination of the spike protein and COVID shot immune suppression, along with the lipid nanoparticle toxicity? We can't know that for sure, but I'm certainly seeing the rise in ovarian cancer diagnoses that Dr. William Makis in Canada has talked about. And I know you've been presenting on this subject as well.
Yeah, so obviously, her medical information has been kept private. So we don't know what organ is involved and what stage she's in. But obviously, it seems to be a pretty dire situation, unfortunately for her. I think it would do a service to the rest of the world if, obviously, it is her personal information, if she did provide more information. And people started raising the possibility that this could possibly be related to the vaccines. So my colleague Pierre Corey actually wrote a op-ed in the Washington Post today addressing this possibility. So I think it's very unfortunate for her, but I think we have to face the reality, and we need to talk about the reality. And what makes this even more troubling is that hundreds of thousands of children were vaccinated needlessly, and so this puts them at risk for increased lifelong risk of cancer. We
No, it
don't know.
absolutely does. And that and reproductive damage to children is staggering with the damage to the ovaries in women and the testicles in men, boys.
Yeah, so these things were rolled out without adequate long-term or even medium-term monitoring for safety, and obviously patients didn't give true informed consent or any consent to these vaccines. And I think, as you said, the biggest tragedy is the vaccination of children, because they weren't in a position to make informed consent. The risk of a child dying of COVID was infinitesimally small. The side effect profile was enormously large, and the long-term effects are unknown. So I think for a parent to allow a child to be vaccinated is probably the worst decision they could possibly make. And that is, without question, a crime.
Well, and we're seeing that happening, for example, in some court cases where people have reached out to Truth for Health Foundation for legal resources. We've seen parents using the weapon of vaccination as punishment for the other parent in a adversarial divorce. So one parent trying to push the vaccination of the child and the other parent trying to defend against it. And it's unconscionable. It's a crime for children to be put in that position by the government or by parents in conflict. But I want to come back to something else. The war against ivermectin by the FDA and the government narrative and the coordinated, orchestrated attack on doctors by the Federation of State Medical Boards. I mean, as soon as in early 2020, when I saw that doctors in every state were getting basically the same letter of warning, I thought to myself, somebody has organized this. This did not happen by chance. The language was the same. The culprit, as it turned out to be, was the Federation of State Medical Boards. But in that war on ivermectin in particular, ivermectin has potent mechanisms that are effective against cancer. And I'd like in the second half for you to talk more about that, because it wasn't just the suppression of ivermectin effective against COVID-19 illness. It's all of the other ways in which this miraculous drug could help patients now with the complications of the COVID shots.
Yeah, so you're right. So, I mean, this is truly an astonishing molecule. So, this was found in the soil in a golf course in Japan. It was produced by a bacteria. So this is a product of nature. This was a gift of nature given to us. This wasn't some molecule manufactured in some laboratory. And as such, nature doesn't make mistakes. And this molecule has remarkable properties. Obviously, we know it's a very effective antiparasitic. We know it's very effective against RNA viruses via multiple mechanisms. We know it's a very effective anti-inflammatory drug. It decreases inflammation. And what we've known for some time now, and has become clearer, is that ivermectin is very effective against almost all cancers. And it works via multiple biological pathways to interfere with cancer cell growth. It causes death of the cancer cell. It interferes with the cancer microenvironment. It prevents cancer angiogenesis, which results in metastases. It acts on the cancer stem cell. So, there are many, many papers in, reputable scientific journals demonstrating the very effective clinical efficacy of ivermectin against cancer. And, we are now aware of remarkable stories of patients with really end-stage metastatic cancer who were treated with ivermectin in really moderate doses and went into remission. So it is truly a remarkable drug. But of course, it goes against big pharma because as we said, it's safe and it's cheap. Chemotherapy drugs are exceedingly expensive. Oncologists make money not only by ordering it, but by giving it. And that the cost of chemotherapy per year is $100,000 to $200,000 a year. So it's exceedingly expensive. And so there are adjunctive therapies that patients should be aware of that are highly effective for the treatment of cancer. And so, consequently, I wrote a monograph on which is entitled "The Use of Repurposed Drugs and Metabolic Therapy for the Treatment of Cancer." This is available for download from our website, flccc.net. It's also available on Amazon if you would like a hard copy. And since cancer will become the commonest cause of death in Western nations, probably one in two men and one in three women are going to get cancer. So this is a disease that's going to affect almost every family in this country. People need to be aware of how to treat it and how to prevent it, because much like COVID, there are certain things people can do to reduce their risk of getting cancer. And so this is really an important subject.
Well, let's talk more about that in the second half and a little bit more about the FDA stipulation of settlement, what that really means. This is Dr. Lee for America with the Whistleblower Report. Check out our website, truthforhealth.org, and all of the high quality professional formulas of the nutraceuticals that we are bringing to the public, both to benefit your health and resilience, and the profits support the public charity. And check out flccc.net for Dr. Merrick's resources on not only treatment of COVID-19 illness, but also the cancer treatment monologue and their vaccine injury guide. We both have vaccine injury treatment guides. The scientific documentation is well researched in the one that Dr. Merrick and his team have developed. And our vaccine injury treatment guide is written for lay people to help you understand some of the complex medical terminology. So, together, both organizations have been working to give you the information to be your best doctor and advocate against the big pharma narrative and use safer, more effective, and lower cost treatments. And you know, Dr. Merrick, just before we go to break, I will comment on this. After reading and listening to your program on innovative treatments for cancers and reading your monograph on that, I very clearly would pursue that myself if I were diagnosed with cancer, because I've seen the devastating impact of traditional chemotherapy with the toxic side effects that really rob people of quality of life in going through cancer treatment. And now that we know so much positive data about the safer repurposed drugs, I honestly think that's the course of action I would personally take in that situation. And I've also been discussing that with many of my patients who've asked for my opinion and shared with them the monograph that you wrote. So you are really continuing to be a leader in helping people with better choices for managing their health care. We'll be right back after the break.
We live in a world full of disinformation, lies, and deceit, often from those institutions and individuals that we used to rely on and trust. In the chaos that surrounds us on a daily basis, it's difficult to find a place for truthful information and helpful guidance. Where can we turn for honest answers, critical solutions, and information that empowers us to be the person that God intended? The Truth for Health Foundation. The Truth for Health Foundation works every day to fight for your basic human rights. We have a track record of providing life-saving emergency actions that can improve your health and empower you with the tools to be safe, happy, and free to live your life. With over 100,000 supporters around the world, we are a critical voice of truth in today's world. We invite you to join our community of financial supporters so that we can continue to be your trusted partner for health, for life, for resilience. Join us today by giving now.
This message is from the Truth for Health Foundation. Hi, I'm Dr. Sam Sigloff, a family medicine physician and a major in the U.S. Army. The following are only my opinions. Service members are being coerced to participate in medical experimentation, with over 7,500 service members being discharged for refusing to participate, many of them losing their retirement and medical benefits. There are allegations that the DoD is committing medical fraud, violating the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and violating constitutional rights of service members. Strong men and women stand ready to defend so that you can sleep peacefully through the night. Now we must stand watch over the military so they can sleep peacefully through the night. Please get involved to help protect the military. This message brought to you by the Truth for Health Foundation. For more information, please visit truthforhealth.org. That's truthforhealth.org. That's truthforhealth.org.
Welcome back to the second half of the Whistleblower Report. This is Dr. Lee for America with Dr. Paul Merrick, one of the world leaders in the early approaches to treatment of COVID-19 in the critical care setting. And he and Dr. Pierre Corey, founders of FLCCC, have monographs on their website for treatment of COVID illness in the critical care setting, for treatment of long COVID, vaccine injury, and repurposed drugs for cancer treatment. So, Dr. Merrick, tell us a little bit more about what this stipulation of settlement with the FDA means. What do they have to do, and what's the difference between this stipulation of settlement and what people are accustomed to with someone winning a lawsuit?
Yeah, so that's a good question. You know, we decided to settle with the FDA because, you know, it would achieve what our objective was. Our objective was for them to tell the truth, to limit their powers, to limit what they can do, and to remove their incriminating false information. So according to the terms of the settlement, The FDA has to remove all their erroneous tweets that you're not a horse, you're not a cow. That tweet has to be removed, as well as all their other social media posts have to be taken down, and they have 21 days to do that. And obviously, this is a landmark case because, the court has basically ruled that the FDA does not have the ability to influence medicine, that they're not physicians, and that they have to take down all of their false misinformation that they were propagating. So there was no financial or any other punitive measures. This was just really a reprimand for the FDA that what they had done was it was wrong. They had lied, they had perpetuated false information. It is a pity that it happens, 3 or 4 years down the road, but you know what? It is what it is. At least we achieved something. And I think it sets an important precedent because it limits the power of the healthcare agencies in what they can do going forward. So this is a landmark case, and that made it absolutely clear that the FDA can regulate medications, they can approve medications, but they cannot tell doctors how to practice medicine. So, in that respect, this is a landmark case.
I totally agree. It is definitely a landmark case. And one of the things that is so significant about it is the way in which the FDA interfered with the practice of medicine was causing such death and destruction to the doctor-patient relationship and to people's lives that at least the courage of the three of you and the persistence of the three of you physicians who honored your oath to the patient and took this suit forward, at least it stops future assaults on patients' lives and doctors' ability to practice medicine by the fact that they were ordered by the court to stay within their regulatory authority. We knew they were exceeding their regulatory authority in 2020, but no one was holding them accountable
Yeah,
until now.
absolutely. And the other tragedy is that many doctors, because they influenced many of the state medical boards, many physicians and healthcare practitioners lost their license over this ivermectin issue, that if they prescribed ivermectin, that their licenses were challenged or removed. And indeed, Dr. Apte currently is facing suspension from the Washington Health Commission because he prescribed ivermectin, which is completely absurd. And we know Meryl Nass in Maine, she actually had her license suspended because she prescribed ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. And these were not complaints from the patients. In fact, in her case, the patients who testified, the ones who she treated and whom the board accused her of, mismanagement, actually were very grateful for the treatment she provided, had nothing but good words to say about Dr. Nass. But again, the board suspended her license just because she prescribed ivermectin, which is a non-FDA approved drug. So the implications of what the FDA did were very far-reaching.
Well, is there now any recourse for these physicians who, like Dr. Nass and Dr. Apter and others that I know, who lost their license or who still are under threat of losing it, now that the FDA has been forced to admit they lied?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting question. And I suppose that's a legal question that the courts or the lawyers will need to sort out because we don't know what will happen. As it so happens, Dr. Corey and myself are currently under investigation by the American Board of Internal Medicine, and they are threatening to remove our board certification for promoting misinformation. The very same misinformation we're talking about. So, we have a hearing later in May, and it will be interesting to see if this FDA ruling has any effect. I don't think it will. I think it's going to be a sham, a court hearing, a kangaroo court where the decision is already made, because these agencies have enormous power. But it will be really interesting to see if this case has any, if it sways the landscape in any way.
But aren't they also the specialty boards and the state medical boards? Aren't they also exceeding their authority in what they're doing? Couldn't the same legal strategies that were used successfully against the FDA, couldn't those same strategies be considered against the specialty boards and the state medical boards?
Yeah, so you raise an interesting question. So, our case was heard by judges who, clearly follow the law and understand the law. Unfortunately, the state medical boards are basically kangaroo courts. It's not, these aren't courts, these aren't, it's not a jury of your peers. And so that these medical boards and the ABIM have infinite power, and they can do what they want to do. But obviously, there may be legal challenges that come down the road, but it is a really interesting question. The real problem is that most of the state medical boards are, people appointed to the board, they're loyal to the board. These are not your peers, and they can decide whatever they want to do. I mean, Meryl Nash's case is a really good example because her defense was impeccable. There was nothing that they could find that she default. What they actually required is that you undergo a mental health examination because they thought she was mentally unfit for prescribing ivermectin. And despite all the shenanigans, and she had a very strong defense, they suspended her license. So, unfortunately, this is part of the tyrannical world that we live in.
Well, one of the approaches that some of the lawyers that are on our legal advisory council guiding some of the legal strategies on these situations is the concept of tortious interference. And I just wonder if, depending, I mean, I realize it's a complicated situation and it's a long drawn out process in any court situation, but I know that the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons has sued the Texas Medical Board and other medical boards and are currently involved in suits against some of the specialty boards that are actually interfering with physician practice in the various ways that they're doing it. And I'm just wondering if we may be able to see that they have extended their reach in ways that were not intended or not within their charter and not compliant with state law. But those are questions beyond us since we are practicing physicians. But it's something to think about. And the other question I wanted to mention, they're having a specialty board certification is something that doctors work hard to achieve. They do specialty training and they take recertification exams and all of that. But ultimately, except for hospital-based practice, physicians are not required to have a specialty certification in order to practice outpatient medicine and serve the patients.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. So the many hospitals require board certification in order to get hospital privileges for a certain specialty, but that's really hospital based. So you're correct, doctors can practice outside of the hospital without being board certified.
And I think patients need to understand that, because quite frankly, someone who stood against the government narrative and advocated for patients is the very kind of doctor I'd like to see.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, Dr. Corey is a good example. You know, he was board certified in pulmonary critical care. He now does outpatient medicine. So they are threatening to remove his board certification. Obviously, I think symbolically that's diabolical, but, you know, it's not going to interfere with his ability to practice and see patients. But, you know, obviously physicians work hard in order to get their board certification. And this seems to be unfair, punitive action for you know, standing up for the truth.
Oh, it absolutely is deliberately punitive and persecutory. And it's designed to serve the tactic of censorship and intimidation. It's a Soviet tactic. It's Stalinesque. It's very similar to what the Soviet Union did to persecute doctors under that totalitarian communist system. And this has not been true of American medicine in our constitutional republic. But we are losing the rights of our constitutional republic very rapidly. And the weaponization of our agencies, whether it's a medical agency, whether it's the FDA, the Department of Justice, the FBI, Department of Homeland Security. I mean, you can go right down the line, weaponization of our courts. We are seeing the weaponization of government against law-abiding citizens, practicing physicians, and anyone who challenges the narrative. That's why you're doing what you're doing, Dr. Merrick. It's why I do what I do. And it's why we have the Whistleblower Report, to help educate the public about the truth against the lies and deception. This is all a tactic of control.
Yeah, and also what they're doing is that they're sending a signal to physicians that if you dare to go against the narrative, or you dare to challenge the narrative, or you have an opposing point of view, that you will lose your license. So this is a way of, again, censoring and controlling what physician behavior. It's not by accident that this happened.
Absolutely not. And I want the public listening to this to understand you are the people affected by the persecution of doctors. We all need doctors at one time or another in our lives. Something happens, and you want good, honest doctors there to help get you the right treatment when you have an emergency. So we need all of you listening to exert the power of your voice and your citizen action to speak up in your community and your state when doctors who try to do the right thing for patients are being attacked and persecuted. Ultimately, it may be your life and your family member's life at stake if all you have left are robot doctors who follow the government narrative and who are willing to withhold proper care when you need it. So we need you in this battle.
Yeah, I agree with you absolutely. We're all in this together, and I think, you know, the general public need to be aware of what's going on. They need to be informed. And also that they need to vote with their feet, that they need to speak with their representatives and try and inform them what is happening and try and influence, you know, the way they behave and the way they vote. Because, you know, I think it's through the courts and through the legislature that we can change this appalling situation.
I think you're exactly right. And I think the third leg of the stool between the courts and the legislature is citizen action and patient empowerment with knowledge about things you can do to be a better advocate, as well as becoming your own physician in positive ways with strategies that are available to you to use on your own, just by using the resources that FLCCC and Truth for Health Foundation have created, based in the good science, to help you. Now, the nice thing is, and Dr. Paul Merrick is one of our scientific advisors, medical scientific advisors for Truth for Health Foundation, as well as the continuing visionary and leader of FLCCC. But we complement each other very beautifully because he and I are on the same page about the kinds of approaches and integration of approaches that need to be utilized. Something I've been doing in medicine for the whole 40 years I've been in medicine, since I first started practice in Norfolk, Virginia in 1985. But our approach is to educate lay people in layman's language based on the good science. And FLCCC is well known for their highly credible and reputable scientific presentations to educate health professionals about all of the data that we know. And so it's a two-pronged approach: educate the caregivers, educate the patients, and then everyone can work together to be a better advocate for what you need, independent of coercion by big pharma, by the government, and by insurance companies who want to push you into a lockstep approach, and quite frankly, big pharma, who's making money on treating all the symptoms of the products they create that cause problems. So it's a vicious cycle.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I think patients need to be empowered. They need to be educated. They need to recognize that they're not passive participants in the physician-patient relationship. You know, they're active participants. They should participate in the decision-making process. They need to give informed consent. They need to understand the treatment that they're given, and they need to engage in a conversation with their physician. The days where physicians dictate to patients the treatment is over with. Patients need to be active participants. And if the physician won't engage in a conversation with the patient, then the patient needs to find a new physician who will engage with them. It's that simple.
Thank you for that. That is a powerful statement, and that makes a good closing. Are there other comments in closing that you'd like to share with our audience?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, patients need to be empowered. They need to be educated. They need to open up their mind, and they need to recognize that they can take control of their healthcare. There are many things they can do to improve their healthcare with very simple lifestyle changes.
Absolutely right. And ultimately, you know, Dr. Merrick, it's actually a quote from Ambroise Paré, a French surgeon from, I think, the 16th century, that's over the door, the entryway at DePaul Hospital in Norfolk, Virginia. God heals the wound, I merely dress it. And ultimately, it is the patients and our creator who are in control of the decisions and the response in medical services. Patients make the choice of what they will do to improve their health. Our role as physicians is to guide them to the best of our ability based on the best science and individual creative thinking for that person that we can bring to it. It's the art and science of medicine that's been true since Hippocrates' day and biblical traditions as well, both in the Old and New Testament. So I applaud you for all that you're doing. I'm honored to be working with you and to have you as one of our advisors. And anytime that we can help be a platform for your work, we are here to assist. Want to thank you for being with us today, and just God bless you for all that you're doing. And for all of you listeners, please share this program, educate people around you that you are in more control than you think, and there are resources to help you take charge of your health, resilience, and medical care when you need it. This is Dr. Lee for America, signing off with the Whistleblower Report today. Join us regularly on truthforhealth.org and the Whistleblower Reports for truth and hope and solutions against the lies and deception. Thank you for joining us today.